the winning sound of Network Sports.
And a very pleasant good evening to you, and welcome to another very special edition of Basin and Guests, heard on Voice of Barbados. You can call us at 434-1790. You can send a WhatsApp to 253-4679 or an email to cricketmason@yahoo.com. Basin and Guests is brought in association with the very good friends at ASFE White Rum, the best shot of the day.
Yes, it feels white rum. If anybody feels they could drink with me, let them come. Open your mouth, drink it up, or you can't qualify to sing this song. Tell me, bartender, ESA is the best shot of the day. Boy, pa 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 da 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 da, pa 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 da da. Say what you want, ESA is the best shot of the day. Is the best shot of the day.
Well, shots were missing in Australia, down under by the West Indies side. And this really is not good at all. In fact, the mighty Gabby sings all the time, Lord, send an answer for we. And I do it in the commercials when I look at West Indies cricket and when they perform so poorly. And tonight, we've got to go through the pain of discussing the West Indies' very ordinary performance in Australia. They were down under, if one cares to describe it like that. And from halfway through in Kingston, Jamaica, right through to Nelson Street in Barbados, we are asking, what's going wrong? What's gone wrong? Where are we going to go from here? Well, tonight on Mason and Guests, we certainly want to look at that. I'm Andrew Mason. Season's greetings to you. We've also got Dr. Andrew Ford already on Zoom, along with Philo Wallace. We hope to get some reaction from some of the big guns across the Caribbean. I just spoke to Jeffrey Dujon, who said he's having his ackee and saltfish, and he will be in a position to speak to us in about half an hour's time. But let's go to a country that has the best roti anywhere in the world. And, of course, we're talking about Trinidad and Tobago, especially if you get it as soon as you come to Piarco. Let's say hello to the ambassador, Derek Murray. Hello, Derek. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Andrew. Unfortunately, I'm not having a roti at the moment, but that's certainly on the cards for the next few days. And in fact, lots of other things for the festive season I'm planning to enjoy on my little sojourn back in Trinidad for a while. So, yep. So, season's greetings to all your listeners and you and Andrew and Philo. And let's hope for a really happy and productive 2023.
Well, it's always good to hear from you. And, of course, Philo Wallace is with us and Dr. Ford. We're now joined by Roland Holder. But Derek, put this in perspective. We went to Australia. I don't think many people expected the West Indies to have gone to Australia to win the series. But to be all up for 77 is something that you would not have been expecting.
No, you're not expecting such extremes, but, you know, Andrew, I think we need to start seriously looking back over the last few years, a few decades, and see what has been a gradual decline in West Indies cricket, not just the fortunes of West Indies cricket, but the way our cricket is run, the way our players are developed or not developed, and just depending on talent. And, you know, it's really been a sad state of affairs. We continually talk about it, but we seem to think that we could go to a World Cup and, oh, it's a T20 World Cup. That's the West Indies' strength at the moment. We're going to win that. We don't, and we think, oh, you know, let's blame the players or somebody. An easy target But no, it's a decline in West Indies cricket, which should not be happening. And we need to grasp the nettle and turn around this decline if we are interested in our cricket surviving, which I, for one, certainly am. And I know a lot of others, look to our cricket to lift our spirit. And, you know, it's really sad when we just, you know, let it go into the decline. But may I just say, I want to commend Philip Simmons. He has done the honorable thing. He's responsible for the team when we did not qualify for the World Cup T20, the group stages even. He did the honorable thing. Now, we are not to assume for one moment that one man, Philip Simmons, is responsible for the decline or the losses of West Indies cricket. And I keep looking to see others follow suit, but nothing like that has happened. But and I'm really sorry that Philip left at the time where he does, and his last outing was recently concluded test series in Australia. But at least he goes with his head held high. He did the honorable thing. And, it's really a pity that there aren't others who have followed suit. And maybe we can talk about that, because it starts with the administration. It doesn't start with who we choose to be coaches or selectors, and criticize that and think, yep, everything's going to be okay in the next series. Mm. It's getting worse and worse.
Mm. So who do you think should have followed Phil Simmons?
Well, for ages, Andrew, you would know that I have been saying that the entire system of administration in West Indies cricket needs to change. And that was recognized way back when. And again, if you want milestones to start where they were, you know, you just go back, you read the Patterson report, you read the Lucky report, you read the Wilkin report, you read the Barito report, you read the Webby report. I mean, the report there saying the same thing, you know, in a different way, maybe with different details. But the administration of West Indies cricket is terrible, and I will say to you that started in the late 80s, 1980s, when you started having things like West Indies Cricket Board Incorporated, which became a little private company, run like a private company by some, private people. And that's where the decline has started. We didn't start losing until 1993 or 95, but it was on the cards that our cricket is being denigrated by a system that is being put in place, not for the benefit of West Indies cricket, but for the self-aggrandizement of a few people. And that cannot be allowed to continue.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're speaking to the former West Indies cricketer, the legendary Derek Murray, and it's really good to have him on the show. He's now back in Trinidad and Tobago. As you know, he's got an assignment there in Jamaica, back home for Christmas. We also have Roland Holder, former West Indies cricketer, on Zoom as well, and Philo Wallace, and of course, Dr. Andrew Ford. Just before we come to you, Dr. Ford, hello to you, Roland Holder. How are you? Roland?
Are you hearing me?
Yeah, we're hearing you. How are you? Season's greetings to you.
Okay, I'm not bad. I'm not doing too badly. Derek, season's greetings to you as well. Hope all is well.
Same to you, Roland. Yep.
Roland, can you put this in perspective? I mean, are you shocked by the poor performance in Australia?
Andrew, I think I'm disappointed by the final innings. Certainly the second test. There was some credible performances in the first test, which I am happy for. Young Chandrapal, Craig, the captain, so doing reasonably well. So we had some relatively good performances in that first test, certainly in the among some of the batters, as the new term is. We didn't do very well bowling. We had quite a few injuries during the tour as well. So I think all in all, there is disappointment. I wouldn't use the term shocked, because I'm pretty sure no one quite would have put a bet on West Indies winning. They would have been happy for West Indies to win. But I think maybe disappointed in our final outing.
Mm-hmm. I see. Dr. Ford, good evening to you. Season's greetings.
Hi, season's greetings to you, Andrew, and Philo, and Derek, and Roland, up and on, Roland. You know, it's, I guess as fans and individuals who like cricket, we would be a bit disappointed. It seemed as though our cricket is a ticking time bomb towards extinction, and it's a question of have we reached zero? Has the bomb gone off? We no longer can get five test series against the top teams, and we can't get a Boxing Day test in Australia. I know we're number eight, and we've had some performances that have hardened us, and in the other formats, T20 cricket being champions twice, we can't get out of the qualifying round. And you know, the time when we dominated IPL with the entertainers plus cricketers, now that cricket has become in that format just about cricket, we are having less players represented. So the thing is that holistically we've had a functional disintegration of our cricket, and I guess the question that we should ask is what we can do to fix it. And if over a 20 plus year period, as Derek explained, since 1995, we haven't done well, then we obviously have to do something different. I think the problem is that we've been trying to do the same thing, believing that we would get a better result, and it was just a matter of application and maybe about the players. But we obviously have to change structures fundamentally. But the question I'd like to ask Derek is, if we look at the building blocks of the Cricket West Indies at the board level, do you think that we should really start at that level to give us a chance to make cricket better at each individual board level? That's a question for Derek.
Unequivocal yes from me on that. And we've been saying this for a long, long time. The way the territorial board being run at the moment leave a lot to be desired. It seems as though the people running the board hanging on to their positions because they hope, expect, wish for a turnaround. You know, every time there are a couple of good performances, you hear about they've turned the corner. And it seems to me that there are individuals in those positions who want to be in those positions when the turnaround comes. But we are devoid of ideas as to how this turnaround should come. And therefore, part of the turnaround is that those persons are now square pegs in round holes. And it is very difficult for someone to say, look, you know, like Philip Simmons has done, you know, I have to take responsibility for where we are, where we have not reached, and therefore I tender my resignation. But it's not just, moving the people from those positions, but it's the putting things in place that cause people to be elected into those positions based on their particular skills in those circumstances. So that, yes, you're going to need accountants, entrepreneurs, lawyers, etc., to navigate some of the issues, but you need a core of cricket people, pure and simple. And therefore, together, they form a collective that then administers cricket in Trinidad and Tobago, in Barbados, in the islands, etc. But not just at that highest level and want to be at West Indies international games and those sorts of things. This is nitty-gritty hard work from school, and I mean from primary school, 9, 10 years old. You start nurturing people's talents or even introducing them to talents that they did not know that they had. And then go through that at secondary school into the time when they get into the 18, 19, 20, looking to be on the verge of international level cricket. And therefore, it's the whole way through that that development takes place. You don't suddenly look at an academy, which is a camp for 2 or 3 weeks, and say, we're going to take some 19 and 20-year-olds, throw them in there, and they're going to be prepared for the next test series or whatnot. If they haven't understood some of the basics of the game at 10 and 11, you know, they aren't going to understand it at 20. So, you know, it's totally wrong. And if we look back in history, that's how our cricket was developed way back then with mentors. People didn't have formal coaching certificates, but every cricketer coming through the ranks knew who to turn to, when to turn to them, when to get advice, when to get coaching, when to get mentoring. And you develop into top class, not just individual cricketers, but teams that made the West Indies proud. You know, we have to recapture that kind of progress and progressions in developing our cricketers. That's not an overnight. That's not going to happen in 2023. Even if everybody gives a Christmas present and says, right, let's start. This is the starting point. Christmas 2022, we start. We're looking to be back on top of the world of cricket in 2032. You know, it's not going to happen just like that. But the longer we put it off, and remember when we talked about it in the 80s and the 90s, people brushed it aside. Oh, no, man, look, we have Lara, and Lara beat Australia with 150, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. so. And where are we? And so we need to go back to basics.
Talking about going back to basics, for Philo and for Roland, if you look at the individual islands and look at the legends of each island, do you think that the legends in each island should play a part in trying to rebuild West Indies cricket from the ground up in their individual islands? I'll ask you, Roland, instead of asking you a difficult question regarding cricket West Indies and structure and otherwise. Roland, as a former player, what do you think about that?
Hi, Doc. Up and on. I think everyone who can assist West Indies cricket, whether it's a former legend, whether it is. Because I don't believe that any contribution is too small. We all need to be united in doing what we can to assist the team, the cricket, that everything that is required to get us back to the winning ways. So I, if that involves the legends, if that involves whoever, I think it is important that, that we seek to embrace all ideas and get the best ones and the workable ones and put them together, and all for the good and betterment of West Indies cricket.
Hello, the role, the legends. Good night to you.
Hi, good night, Dr. Four. Good night, Andrew.
Good night, Philo.
Derek. Caesar's greetings as well to everyone. Roland. My friend Boogie Burt and Sherlock Hart and my friend in England, Carlos. Andrew, the performances of the team in that Australia would have shocked a lot of people. I was shocked, particularly for the second test match. We looked so good in the first test match. We competed. And then the second test match, the wheels just went off the cart. And we obviously were bowled over 77, which is not good. But there were some good signs still in Australia from some people that we know who they were. And I think that there's a starting point. I like the idea of the territorial boards to me now have to play a bigger role in getting those cricketers who they believe are good enough to make it, to come together and hone their skills. I am a big believer that within the territories, there are the legends. And there are others outside of the legends as well who can add to help us to develop a culture of West Indies cricket. I know years ago that the former president, Dave Cameron, was traveling around the region talking about a West Indies cricket coaching manual, the way forward for West Indies cricket and coaching. I don't know what has happened to that document, if it ever went into circulation. But we need to find the right resources within the territories to help develop our cricketers. And not only skill-wise, Dr. Ford, we have to find professional people who can help our young cricketers mentally to deal with the rigors of international cricket. I think our squad in Australia, they had a couple of warm-up games, but we start well and we don't finish well. So it has to do with mental, and we need to also get that mental element into our cricketers. No longer our cricketers go off to England and play a long summer. So they need to find some mechanism. The territorial boards need to find some mechanism through Cricket West Indies to help our players develop mentally and get those iconic figures from the great West Indies era to make contributions. I know most of them are grown up, but we can work with them. We can put them to work along with some of our young coaches and help them to develop certain skills and bring their knowledge together. I have a complete package and present it to Cricket West Indies. We have 6 territorial boards. And it's 6 territorial boards can present a package from the legends or the icons within the territories of how we can structure our cricket. I think West Indies Cricket Board has the prudent people in place to package those 6 documents and bring it into one and get it throughout the region. I think all hands on deck right now to get our cricket back the green light. It is on a red light at the moment, and we need to get it on that green light to get it moving in the right direction. But it needs input from all those capable people who are willing to make a significant contribution and the players themselves buying in to what the territorial boards in conjunction with Cricket West Indies are looking for to get them to develop and move our cricket forward. Australia has happened. It has put us, it has shown us where we are in world cricket. And we need now to pick the pieces up and take our cricket forward with positive thinking and the right people in the right places to make decisions for West Indies cricket.
All right, when we come back from a commercial break, we certainly get a reaction from Derek Murray in relation to the role of the legends. Mason and Guest brought to an association with the very good friends at ASFE White Rum, the best shot of the day.
ASFE White Rum. If anybody feel they could drink with me, let them come. Open your mouth, drink it up, or you can't qualify to sing this song. Tell me, bartender, ESA is the best shot of the day. Boy, pa 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 da 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 da, pa 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 da da. Say what you want, ESA is the best shot of the day. Is the best shot of the day.
All right, we are on Mason and Guest. I'm Andrew Mason, along with co-host Dr. Andrew Ford. We've got Philo Wallace, former West Indies cricketers. Of course, Philo Wallace, Roland Holder, and Derek Murray. Derek, the role of the legends. Are you keen to help out, if asked?
Of course, I don't think there is any former player that would not want to be and offer to be a part of the rehabilitation process. And I don't think that anybody is actually looking for some title and some position or something. Just an opportunity to have an input into the further development of West Indies cricket in the future. So I think I'm speaking for the couple of hundred people who fit that bill, and that we would agree to be part of it. But I also am interested in what Philo and Roland are saying, because it's very similar to what I'm saying, that we need to find ways, whether it's mental development, we need to find ways of developing the talent that we have. And all of us would look back at our own careers and say, you know, the people who really helped us in our early stages were, you know, Noel Gillen or Pa Aliyong, Guy Yearwood, you know, wherever these people were, plus the former players. You know, you just sit at the feet of Everton Weeks and Frank Worrell and listen to them talking. You listen to, the Stallmeyer, the Ray, the whoever. And as I say, none of them had coaching certificates. None of them were looking for jobs to coach, but help. So we understand that you don't have only players, former players, to get your advice and mentorship from. But there are other players or other people who have given that service and will give that service. But having heard Roland and Philo say similar things to what I'm saying and thinking, I'm keep begging for the day where we can have an opportunity to put those things into practice. You know, so it's all well and good, Roland saying, yes, you know, we have to do this, fellow saying, this is how the territorial board should be. And so how long, how often are we going to say that and nothing happen? The boards kind of behave like they in a war situation where they entrench themselves, and anybody who speaks about doing something different is an enemy, you know, and therefore must keep away from the players, must be kept away from the game. And that is so sad. I think either Philo or Roland use the expression that some of us who played in the past are growing up now. It's getting a little more than growing up. Too often we're seeing people who have passed away and going, and what they have to offer is lost. And, you know, the sooner we actually get started, the better. But I don't know what it takes. I see they've asked for another report from Laura and Mickey Arthur and somebody. I'm not sure what they expect to get from that report that's different from the others that we've had. But hopefully, they'll get a report and act on it rather than shelve it.
Mm-hmm. Derek, how do you rate the performance of the Skerrick administration?
Again, like the rest of West Indies cricket, you have to say you're disappointed because you expected so much. So much was promised when they were having elections, and this is what they're going to do, and these are the changes they're going to see. And they got a report from the Webby report, and we were going to act on that and implement it. You know, but as I say, if they don't want to implement the Webby report, they could implement the Patterson or the Barry 2, or they can combine all of them and find a way to do it. But Somebody said you cannot just keep doing the same thing over and over and expect it to be different.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, change has to happen, whether you call it West Indies Cricket Board or CWI or whatever initials you want to put. That is just a name, a cosmetic thing. The substance has to change, the outlook has to change, and the way it operates.
Mm-hmm.
And in conjunction with the territorial board and the schools, cricket associations, etc., everything has to be put together to make it a viable, unified process from cradle to international status.
Just before we go to Roland Hold, I know that Dr. Ford has got a question for you. Would you, Derek, be interested in becoming president of Cricket West Indies?
At this age, I mean, that's a really vibrant young person's job. I would take on any kind of interim role
mm-hmm.
if it is specified.
Right.
If it is interim and it is, you know, 18 months, 2 years, you do something and at the end of that, you have the kind of elections with the kind of parameters for dividing up the role between cricketers, doctors, medical people, lawyers, entrepreneurs, financiers, whatever you need. And you put that in place in a specified 18 months, I'm saying,
mm-hmm.
shouldn't be longer than a year, but let's say 18 months, we could get together a group of people to do an interim job and make sure that then we leave West Indies cricket in a stronger position. But yeah, I mean, as I say, I'm not looking at, under the present circumstances, to run for election tomorrow to try and get voted into a position that is a position of weakness, because it is weak if mm-hmm. all of us are our friends and cronies and we get together and vote for each other and do things, and then we have to dole out positions based on nepotism, cronyism, etc. That's why we get to nowhere. We talk about how disappointing the players were, but we could take a step back and say how disappointing the coaches, the medical staff, and so that the team has at the moment. Look at how many people are unfit. People can't play two test matches consecutively,
mm-hmm.
you know. So it's everything. It's not just, you know, the finances that are in disarray, or it's not just the coaching or the coach, or, you know, it's the whole series of things. And if all these coaches that went to Australia resign, you'll just gather up eight of your partners around the place and put them in positions to do things, you know. There is nothing that says there is merit attached to this and that each person in each position is accountable.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that is what you have to get to. And, you know, as I say, if there's an 18-month interim period that you're going to put these people, I mean, if they're willing, you could go back to the same people who did the report, the Webby, Barito, Patterson, etc., and put those people in position.
Mm-hmm.
That
mm-hmm.
would help, you know. Not that I'm saying that they would make the best cricket administration, but they are a group of people who could help us to transition. In that situation, I'd be happy to be part of that. But as I say, just run to be president of the Trinidad Cricket Board, to be president of the West Indies Board, under the terms of whatever incorporated something it is, I'm not sure too many people would be rushing for that.
Dr. Ford?
Listening, I mean, Derek, you were a former president of the Trinidad and Tobago board, and I assume you would have been a director of the whatever form Cricket West Indies was in at that time. Is that true?
Yep.
Yes, so from your experience of being on the inside and being one of the directors, were there any frustrations or difficulties you saw in the way that it functions at that time when you were there?
Mm. Yes, absolutely. Which informs some of what I'm saying now. I went into it at the time thinking that the president and your point of CEO, and between you could change the thinking of the board, and you can do things differently and have a change of input into the West Indies board. It's very, very difficult under the present circumstances, because you either have to break ranks, and in fact, I don't know if you'd remember, but I got a lot of criticism because one AGM of the West Indies board meeting, I refused to attend, and Trinidad was not represented at that meeting, because it was such a pro forma kind of thing that had happened that you thought, why should I be part of that? You know, we're only wasting money going to the meeting and, staying 2 days in a hotel somewhere. But, this is the way to try and bring attention to the things weren't being run properly. But, so it is not something, Andrew, that I've just done for sour grapes or something like that. I'm not going to be going up for any election or anything. So, the former West Indies cricketer in me would love to have been president of the Trinidad and Tobago Cricket Board, president of the West Indies Cricket Board, but of a board that could make a difference and could help us to get back to the top of West Indies cricket. But it needs some of those reports that we should all study as fans, and not just quote them, why they didn't do the Patterson report, why they didn't do the Webby report, but to actually understand what these reports were saying and how they were trying to set us up as a proper directorate. We were more representatives of Trinidad and Tobago, mm-hmm. as representatives to the board rather than directors acting with true fiduciary responsibility.
Mm. Yeah, Roland, you're a former player, and at your time it was pretty tough getting into the team. Lots of competition, lots of layers. But I'm going back to the fitness aspect and having a medical panel and having fitness standards, which, as I said, they were elucidated for England and for India. You can see them online, and ours has never been really there. And in conversations with members of the panel, I found that there wasn't a lot of logic in the way the fitness standards were put forward, and we've had a spate of unfit players. But what do you think is missing in terms of fitness for players now compared to when you were a player?
Doc, it's actually a difficult question to answer. We I think we have in place perhaps more support around the team now than when I played. There are S&C strength and conditioning trainers at the territorial level for each team. The West Indies team has one. I don't think any team leaves the Caribbean, whether it's under 19s, under 15s, without an S&C trainer. A lot of it, I believe, falls down to personal responsibility, where individuals have to take responsibility for their personal fitness, and you have persons, or the S&Cs can only provide the program for you. But remember, the S&Cs only basically see you when you get together for a tour. So when you go home from a tour, what then? What do you do? Do you follow through on your program? Do you go to the gym? Do you pay a personal trainer? I think those are the questions that perhaps need to be looked at. But generally, I think from the CWR level, there is S&C support for all these individuals 24/7. So you can actually reach out to your S&C trainer via whatever medium you choose and get some guidance, etc. But I still think it is personal responsibility in terms of getting your fitness to the required level and maintaining it.
Mm. Philo, you have a view too. I mean, we heard Colin Croft used to run over 10 miles a day, and you know, you played, and people, we didn't have as many injuries when you played as when we played now, as when we play now. So what's the difference?
I think the difference, Dr. Ford, is that the players have to commit themselves to being fit. When I played, no one had to tell us about being fit. Playing the game, getting out there running, doing your stuff in the midday sun in the morning, going on the beach was part of our natural regime. Now we've given these players everything on a golden platter, not even silver, but golden platter. They seem to obviously take it for granted. We had a coach called Otis Gibson. When he was appointed West Indies head coach, his first mantra was getting the guys fit. And some of the players in that squad at that time rejected it, said, no, we're not athletes. And it's the same bugbear now that is killing us. It's our fitness. When I played, the only unfit player I must have played with was George Minton. We never really had unfit players and people pulling hamstrings and stuff like that. You know, you might get a finger injury because the ball bumps and nip your finger, but we never really had serious hamstring injuries like what we're seeing nowadays. And these guys are supposed to be fitter. So I believe that they're playing less cricket.
Mm-hmm.
They're telling us that they're spending more time in the gym, but they're playing less cricket, so the muscles, they don't have the muscle memory for the specific job of being a cricketer. Mm-hmm. A bowler has to run and bowl in, bowl. You have to bowl to get your muscles ready. A batter has to bat long in the net, and wherever he finds the bat. Even yesterday I was at the supermarket, and a guy said, well, you know, we never see these guys coming into the villages. Nothing. You know, and it burns me that our present West Indies cricketers don't participate in local cricket. They don't see the importance of local cricket to aid them at the first class and international level. And that is the problem. I used to play a lot of cricket. I used to go to BCL cricket. There was no club cricket going on for Spartan. You go and play BCL cricket in the villages around Barbados, but you're playing cricket. So I find that the fitness nowadays, because they're not playing enough cricket, mm-hmm. their muscles are not strong enough, and then they're actually going on these difficult tours, they struggle. The test matches are back. They only little 2 or 3 day break. Don't know how much practicing they do, but their muscles are not strong enough for the rigors of international cricket, and they're breaking down on us. And again, too, Dr. Ford, our players are not really that strong. They look big. They're not strong.
Mm.
When you look at some of our players, they're frail. They're very, very frail.
Mm.
And you would expect that over a period of time, you would expect to see some of these players muscle up. I don't know what they're doing. I don't know who do what. Roland said that they can get the strength and conditioning coach 24/7. But the question is, are they interested in reaching out to that person to stay fit, even when they're not playing?
Mm-hmm.
That's a proper question. Are these players really interested in their personal development? Or do you have to put a rope around their necks and pull them into what you want them to become? And then you'll be hearing, you're too tough. But I believe that toughness now has to show its head in order for West Indies cricket to ship up. If we don't shape up, we're going to continue to be shipped out and be criticized. It hurts when we hear our bowlers are not even good enough for club cricket.
Oh dear.
At the international level. That is hurtful.
It is. All right, Philip, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to go to Australia, of course, and get a view from Jeff Lemon, who's a noted journalist there. The Australians really might have been expecting a little bit more from the West Indies. We're going to hear from him what's the reaction to the West Indies' very ordinary performance in Australia. Isn't and guests, brought in association with the very good friends at ASFE Wet Rum, the best shot of the day.
If anybody feel they could drink with me, let them come. Open your mouth, drink it up, or you can't qualify to sing this song. Tell me, bartender, ESA is the best shot of the day. Boy, pa 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 da 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 pa 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 da da. Say what you want, ESA is the best shot of the day. Is the best shot of the day.
All right, heading to 7 o'clock in the country. We're not going to keep Derek Murray too much longer. I know he's back in Trinidad.
Thank you. Yep.
Yeah, I know. I know you got to go. So what we're going to do? We're going to get find out from you just before you go. I mean, where do we go from here, Derek? Where do we really go from here? Because we're in big trouble before you go.
Yeah, I think Andrew, we have to start with the basics. We have to go back to our administrative structure and ensure that the administrative structure of the West Indies Cricket Board is such that people serving on the board are true directors with true fiduciary responsibility. And so everybody from the top has to start taking personal responsibility and be personally accountable. Then you come to the territorial boards, and they have to have a same or similar standing. From the territorial boards, you go into your, in the islands, the individual island boards, etc. In the other places, you may want to have zones or parishes or however you share that out. It has to come down the age levels, and so you have to have a continuous process of development. Everybody has talent. We see it every day. We see people from Nepal with talent, Afghanistan has test status, Ireland has test status. You know, so you just look through the whole gamut of people, and all of them have talent. So the fact that we have talent is of no real input interest. What it is what you do with that talent, how you nurture that talent and make a competitive team. And so the whole system has to be geared towards that. Yes, players have to take responsibility for their individual fitness, etc. But you do that if it is a truly competitive situation. If the only way I could get into a Trinidad and Tobago under 17 team or under 18 team is to be fit and consistently better than other people, I'm going to do that. If it is that I could get by on the basis of cronyism and so, then I'll take the easy way out and do it and collect my paycheck at the end of the month and I'm happy. So we really need, and it's not rocket science we're talking about, Andrew. You look at all the cricket boards around the world, and each of them have changed from the time when England had their first cricket board, and there was a representative from each county and the two universities. There were 36 people sitting around discussing how to have three-day cricket, how to have bonus points and whatnot, how to assess umpires and so. You've come down now to a professional board of the ECB. You have that in Australia. New Zealand are a prime example. If you're looking for a country about a similar size to the West Indies, you know, they have their same things and they keep developing their players. All of a sudden, New Zealand have gone from, and also ran in test and international cricket. They're one of the top teams in international cricket in all formats of the game. You know, so, you know, unless we can aspire to that and change the system to suit, we're just going to have more and more discussions about whether we rank 7th or 8th or 9th, or if Afghanistan and Nepal and so come and pass us, we will then be, you know, 14th and 15th and 16th.
All right.
But the writing is clear.
Right. Well, Derek, we want to thank you very much indeed for coming through and talking to us. We want to wish you all the best for Christmas and enjoy the rest of your evening.
Right. The same to you, Andrew, and Dr. Ford and the panel and all our listeners and viewers and all fans of West Indies cricket.
Thank you very much indeed. Derek Murray, a former West Indies cricketer, legend, offering his perspectives. Let's go to Australia and talk to Jeff Lemon. Jeff, we've been trying to reach you for some time now. Finally, we've got you. How are you? Good morning to you. I'm sure you're, had your breakfast already. How are you, Jeff?
Good morning. Yes, nice to hear your voice, and I'm glad that we were able to link up at last.
Mm-hmm. What time is it now? What part of the world are you, and what time is it?
It's about 9:30 in the morning. I'm in Melbourne. I will head off to Brisbane on Friday for the test match against South Africa. So we've been Perth, Adelaide already for the West Indies tests, and then the South Africa series about to start.
I see. Your reaction to this West Indies performance, some say it was disappointing, some say it was shocking. Give me your reaction.
Well, I think you can look at it in a couple of ways. I don't think anybody was really expecting this West Indies team to come to Australia and dominate or win, you know, given that travelling to Australia is one of the hardest jobs in world cricket. You know, India have found a way to come here and win in recent years, but most teams struggle to compete when they come here. But I think we were expecting them to be more competitive, certainly on a bowling front. If you've looked at that West Indies team before the tour, you thought, well, that's a strong fast bowling group. They've got four good frontline quicks. They've got Kyle Mayers coming in reserve. And that should be the kind of attack that will at least challenge Australia in Perth, where there would be more pace and bounce. And so I think that's the real surprising thing. Australia declared four times in the series, and there was at no stage really where that West Indies team looked like they had the know-how to bowl out Australia in their own conditions. And so, yeah, for me, that was the more surprising part.
Mm-hmm. Doc or Philip, any questions for Jeff?
Jeff, congratulations to Australia again. I mean, we saw some really brilliant performances by Smith and Head and Mashagne, and also the bowling of Lyon. I mean, I know that we were bad, but Australia seemed to be terribly good. And all of your pace bowlers looked fit and did very well. Tell us about those three big bats in the Australian team and the bowling of Lyon.
Yeah, well, this Australian team has been being rebuilt, since the bans to Smith and Warner. They had to find a way to put this team back together. But it's a very consistent team now in terms of being picked. It's almost the same 11 almost every time. It's almost the same first choice bowling attack, certainly when you have Stark, Hazelwood, Cummins, Lyon. Those four have played, I think, 22 test matches together, which is very unusual. And Nathan Lyon is the linchpin of that. He's played 90 test matches in a row for Australia. He hasn't missed a test match through injury in all that time, which is an extraordinary career. And he's gone past 450 wickets as well. So, I mean, the only Australians ahead of him are Shane Warne and Glenn McGrath in terms of overall wicket taking. So I think when you have that kind of consistency from a key member, that gives so much more stability to everybody else. And we saw that with West Indies, where they didn't have a spinner they could rely on. They had Roston Chase trying to do a job, and they had Craig Brathwaite dropping in and in support. But without a proper quality frontline spinner, it makes assembling a bowling innings so much more difficult. So I think that's the significance of Nathan Lyon, is that the rest can build around him.
I'm glad you touch on Nathan Lyon, because I think he's an extraordinary cricketer. The development of Nathan Lyon, he's gone 90 test matches, 450 plus wickets. His development, how Australia, cricket Australia went about developing this young man to become what he's become now. But I watch the cricket, and I find that Lyon knows when he is going to come into play, and he delivers more often than not. How has he developed? What was put in place for him to help him to develop to be such a potent an important cog in that bowling unit.
Well, it's interesting with Nathan Lyon because until the age of 24, he was still playing club cricket in Canberra. He didn't have any particular ambitions to play a high level of cricket because he didn't think that was going to happen. And then he got picked up on spec, basically, to play for South Australia in the previous version of the Big Bash in the T20 competition, and then got himself a few Sheffield Shield games for South Australia, did well enough as an attacking off spinner, you know, as somebody who really ripped the ball, turned the ball as far as he could and just tried to attack. And because there was a lack of spin options in Australia, he got fast-tracked to the Australian team in 2011 and did well enough in his first couple of matches to suggest that there was enough potential there. So I think the raw ability for Lyon was already there. It was about recognizing that and then helping him develop into a more consistent bowler, a bowler who can change modes, who can defend when he needs to, who can go to Asia and work out how to prosper in those conditions, where his first couple of tours to Asia, he struggled, and then after that, he started to find methods to succeed by changing up his bowling style in different conditions. But the main development, I think, was mental, because Nathan Lyon was a very insecure character. He didn't think that he belonged at test level for a number of years, and it took him a long time to actually believe in himself. Mm. Now he does believe in himself because he has the belief from the rest of the team. And I think that's been the number one difference in how he's developed. Is it's taken him a long time to do it, but discovering that self-belief.
Wonderful. All right, Doc, just before you come in, a little bit later on the show, of course, there's the BIM. In fact, in Barbados, we've had a very interesting situation. We are accustomed to T20 cricket. Now it's T10 cricket. And pretty soon we want to hear what's been happening as far as that is concerned as well. So we're going to change focus a little bit later on the show. But let's go to Kingston, Jamaica, and speak to the former West Indies wicketkeeper. We had one wicketkeeper in Derek Murray. Now we found another in Jeffrey Dujon. And we want to get his perspectives in relation to the West Indies performance against Australia. Good evening to you, Jeffrey. How are you? Jeffrey, we got Jeffrey Dujon there. Just checking to see if he's still with us. Is he? Hello, Jeffrey.
Yes, Andrew.
Okay, are you still eating ackee and saltfish? We were trying to call you a minute ago. You're still stuffing your face, Jeffrey.
No. Actually, I was in a little meeting.
Oh, I see. A little meeting. A meeting with the West Indies team, Jeffrey.
No, a meeting, just doing some eating.
I like that. Well, we're not going to take up too much of your time because we know that you go to bed very, very early. But your reaction to this, Jeffrey, I mean, a mauling in Australia?
Well, I'm not really surprised, actually. And remember the last conversation we had?
Yes.
I more or less told you what was going to happen. You know, it's just another symptom of where our cricket is going. It was interesting to hear someone speaking before, I don't know who it was, talking about Nathan Lyon and his development.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, and every time we talk about these players who, you know, seem to just hold their own really well at international level, you ask the question, where did their cricket start?
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't start in one day cricket or that sort of thing. They learn to play the game properly, and I think, and that has always been the launching pad, the basis upon which players develop into good all-round international players, you know. And because not only do you have to you know, be able to adapt to conditions, you have to be able to think. And the point that I was most interested in was the point of being able to think through situations, adapt to situations, work things out. You know, he went to the subcontinent the first time, didn't do well. But the next time he went back, he found a way because he had developed his game, not only physically, but mentally. And all of these things that I'm talking about are what is lacking in West Indies cricket. I think we've put the cart before the horse, you know. And as a result of it, we are reaping the whirlwind of, you know, not being able to play the game properly.
That's true. I mean, Jeffrey, they look bad, huh? I mean, in every facet. I mean, batting, bowling, there was one or two glimpses to Chander Paul and Brathwaite, but generally it was a very, 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 very weak position. Do you see anything going forward, though? Any light at the end of the tunnel? I mean, we say that all the time. I mean, are we going to continue to perform so poorly?
Well, where Test cricket is concerned, I am not very hopeful in the sense that I don't think that we're developing our players properly. You know, the basis has got to be the longer form of the game where you really start to understand, be able to work through situations, be able to concentrate, all of these things. Because when the game gets shorter, all of these things have to be more acute. You know, also, I think that we've continued to produce a lot of players who have technical problems, who have not been able to adapt to conditions. You know, and I don't see that changing unless we make a radical change in the culture of not only how we play our cricket, but how we coach it.
Oh, I see.
We have to teach the game better. We have players who are, I can, you know, sit down and watch them play and realize that they don't have a good grounding in the game. They have the physical skills,
right?
But they don't have a good grounding in the game. So the mental skills, the ability to identify situations, to adapt to them, all of that is missing. So they tend to play one way all the time. And you can't do that in international cricket.
No, you can't at all. Can't at all. Talking about technical problems, I mean, look at Brooks, look at Bonner and Kyle Mayers. Let's speak about Bonner. He's been struck twice. He was struck by Norcia in St. Lucia, and now he's gone to Australia. What is this big problem, Bonner? Tell me.
Well, there isn't a whole lot of footwork, I don't think.
Ooh.
You know, and again, you know, you get yourself into situations where you're trying to defend yourself instead of getting out of the way or attacking the ball. You get caught in between. And, you know, these things can happen. And, you know, if your footwork isn't good enough, you will get yourself into positions like this. And bowlers will identify these things, you know. So I think that is probably one part of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to be very clear in your thoughts, your thought process. You know, the old adage, know what to leave and know what to play, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Bonner seems to be struggling a lot, though, Jeffrey. I mean, and back in the way to square leg, too, quite a bit.
Well, these things should not be happening to people who... I can understand somebody who has just come into the international game and might be, you know, a little bit, you know, nervous or whatever. But if you've been around for a while, then, you know, if you are not mentally attuned at this point, then you either have a technical problem or something like that. But there is a problem that is going to hinder you in situations when you are put under pressure.
Mm-hmm. Jeff, let's go back to you. Jeff Lemon, noted journalist from Australia. What are the Australians saying about the West Indies, though? I mean, when I hear the commentaries, I mean, it's almost like this is a level of pain watching the West Indies. What's been the reaction in Australia to the West Indies' awful performance?
Well, I think it's pretty consistent with how it's been for the last 10, even 15 years, which is that when West Indies teams come to Australia now, they're not competitive. You know, ever since 2000, 2001, you know, that team that lost 5-0, you could understand that because they were up against one of the all-time great Australian teams. And we know now just how good that Australian team was under Steve Waugh. But since then, we've rarely had a competitive test series against West Indies in Australia. The previous series that you'd remember in 2015, 16, was it? You know, that was a walkover as well.
Yes.
And I think there's a lot of disappointment because there's a lot of nostalgia in Australia about the past of West Indies cricket. And I think in a lot of ways we spent too much time thinking about and talking about the great era of West Indies cricket and saying, well, the current era doesn't live up to it. But it's also natural that that happens because people remember being so blown away by West Indies teams and impressed by the skill and the ferocity and the swagger that West Indies teams used to have when they visited Australia. And the fact that that doesn't exist anymore is a source of real grief, I think, for a lot of cricket lovers in Australia. You know, that's what they want to see. They want to see those Caribbean teams taking on the game the way they used to do. And maybe we just have to accept that that was a different time and this is a different world that we live in now, and trying to recreate the past doesn't work. Instead, you have to create something different and better for the future.
Mm-hmm. Doc?
I'd like to ask Jeff again. I mean, we saw the two bowling attacks, and, you know, Australia seemed to bowl a little fuller. They seemed to attack the stumps a little more. If you were to advise the West Indian quicks about bowling in Australia and doing better than they did, where do you think we went wrong as we tried to dismiss unsuccessfully Australia on four occasions?
Well, I think it's worth recognizing that for the second test match, the bowling attack was decimated by injury at that point. You know, Kumar Roach was out, Jaden Seals was out, Kyle Mayers was out. So that's, you know, three of the very important cogs. When you look at the success West Indies have had in the last couple of years in test cricket, it's generally been built around those three making big contributions. So I don't think it's fair to be too harsh on the Adelaide result, given the number of injuries West Indies had by that point. But, you know, in Perth, it seemed like Jaden Seals wasn't really fit to bowl, didn't hit proper pace. Hasari Joseph had a problem with a migraine or something in the first innings and wasn't able to bowl at full speed there. But basically, it's about consistency and it's about finding the right length in Australia. And usually that length is a little bit shorter than it is elsewhere. It's more it's more that hard length. It's more top of off stump or even a little further back in order to use the bounce in the pitches and try to get, you know, you can get players edging off the back foot as much as off the front foot. The ball doesn't swing very much or doesn't swing for very long. And then it's about using the short ball decisively rather than just indiscriminately. So basically what we saw from West Indies was that the bowling was too erratic. They weren't able to build up pressure. You saw how easily, particularly the likes of Smith, Labuschagne and Travis Head, the three that you mentioned before, were able to get off strike. You know, there were long periods in those partnerships where they weren't smashing boundaries all over the place, but they were still scoring four or five runs and over just by taking ones and twos. And then just offering too much width to players like Travis Head, who will smash wide bowling all day long. So it just seemed like it was a matter of consistency. This Australian fast bowling attack, like I said, they've been bowling together since 2017, the same three quicks, which is almost unheard of in Test cricket to have a group of fast bowlers last that long. And so they know their game in Australia. They know exactly how to do it on different Australian pitches. And they know the kind of consistency that they need to bring pressure. But they also had more speed through the air. They had Mitchell Starc able to bowl full and attack the stumps and bowl really quickly. When you've got Cummins and Hazelwood in reserve, those two can both bowl above 140 as well. So they had a consistently faster bowling attack than West Indies across that Perth test, and that made a difference as well.
Before Philo comes in, just say a little bit about what you thought about young Chanderpaul, because that's one of the
positives. Yeah. Chanderpaul.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the success stories. Absolutely. I mean, I was really impressed with Brathwaite and Chanderpaul in Perth, the way that they didn't give up the game, you know, after conceding such a big first innings score. You often see a team come in after a fielding for a couple of days and they're deflated and they're tired, and they come out and play tired shots and they basically give up at that point. Now, we saw that in the second innings in Adelaide, but we didn't see it in Perth. And I thought that was impressive given the amount of time they spent in the field. Chanderpaul, I watched him in the PM's 11 game as well, where he made a century in that warm-up match too. And he just looks the goods, mainly in terms of temperament. So when you've got a new player, I mean, yes, he's not a kid. You know, everybody's thinking of him as Shiv's kid, but he's 26. He's not a child. But having the temperament to come in and leave the ball well in your first test match, yes. I think that's the most important part, right? That's coming out and playing good shots. Lots of players have good shots. You know, they can top edge a hook shot for six, but to come out and leave the ball well outside your off stump as a left-hander and be judicious about which balls to attack and which ones to leave alone, mm-hmm. that seemed like the most exciting thing in terms of having a long-term test prospect.
Well, if I could just say something,
sure,
Andrew.
Sure.
You know, just listening here, you know, those two names that were called, this is what our West Indian batting needs to be built around. These are two players whose strong point is their patience.
Right.
You know, they're prepared to stay there and play long innings, leave the ball a lot, you know, and really, you know, choose the deliveries to attack. I don't see this where the rest of our batting is concerned. So when I was talking more about, you know, we have to have a different culture, we have to have a different approach, this is what I'm talking about, the mental aspects of the game. This is where we're really falling down. The inconsistency of our bowlers is one. Okay, if you don't have pace, you don't have pace. The slower you are is the more consistent you need to be, you know. And consistency, it's patience as well. You know, you can't just be bowling bouncers at people because they hit you for four or trying something. You have to have the discipline to stay with the plan and be patient. And we haven't been exhibiting this, you know, in any aspect of the game.
Jeffrey, before you go, we got a commercial break coming up, heading up to 7:30 as well. We got to change focus after this. If you look forward, I understand that we're going to be playing Zimbabwe in two test matches at the start of the year. Then we go to South Africa. Look into your crystal ball, Jeffrey. You think we'll do better against Zimbabwe and then South Africa in February?
Well, we'd better do better against Zimbabwe. It's about that. South Africa, for some reason, to me, seem to be going through a little bit of a transition phase. I think that we probably will do better against them than we would have against Australia. But still, it's going to be hard yards because, mm-hmm. again, we've still not been able to find mm-hmm. a top class spinner.
No,
you know, and this is something that's very important mm-hmm. these days. This is a weapon that you have to have, you know, and. Well, you know,
what about our fast bowling, Jeffrey?
Well, back again to being consistent and being patient.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got to follow the basics.
Mm. What about Kemal Roach? Do you think he's coming to the end of the line, or you think he can continue for a little longer, Kemal Roach?
Well, you know, I think he's one of our most consistent bowlers and most successful. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he's coming to the end of the line now, but I think he still has a bit left in him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but the important thing is going to be our batting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I hope some lessons were learned by the experience in Australia
mm-hmm.
that you have to stick around for a long time if you want to make runs at this level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't have batsmen who are good enough to dominate, but they're still good enough to make big scores if they apply themselves properly.
Mm-hmm. Jeffrey, I want to thank you for coming on Mason and Guest. We will not hear you for the rest of the year. Looking forward to Christmas, Jeffrey. I know you're a Christmas man, I'm told.
Well, you know, any holiday is a good holiday for me.
Playing a lot of golf, Jeffrey?
I hope to. I've been doing that recently. But I just want to wish everyone a blessed festive season and all the best for the new year when it comes.
Wonderful. All right, Jeffrey Dujon, always good to have you on Mason and Guest. We're going to pause for business calls. Jeff Lemons is going to stay with us, 4241790, and then we're going to change focus. Mason and Guest, brought in association with our very good friends at ASFE, where we're on the best shot of the day.
If Eddie
everybody see they could drink with me. Let them come. Open your mouth, drink it down, or you can't qualify to sing this song. Tell me, bartender, ESA is the best shot of the day. Boy, pa 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 da 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 pa 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 da da. Say what you want. ESA is the best shot of the day. Is the best shot of the day.
All right, wonderful. Well, someone from Jamaica is calling me. It's very difficult to answer the phone, I suppose, is after the contribution of Jeffrey Dujon. 441790, you can call and participate. Jeff Lemon is going to leave us pretty soon. But
I have a call for you.
Oh, hello? Oh, you do? Okay,
there's
fine.
A call here. Let's take one call. Okay. It's about time. It's 7:30.
All right. Hello, welcome, Mason and Guest.
Yeah, good evening.
How are you? How is the poet going? How is the poet?
The poet is not only a poet. The poet is a fortune teller. I tell you all before the tour started, Australia was going to pile on the run and then be the same 2 or 3 days.
Right.
The first test only made it on the 5th day because Australia bought it twice. Right, and then it boggles my mind to see, and I keep mentioning all the time, and I hear fellow mention it there today, that when we was winning, we had a psychology.
Right.
And we are losing all. Every time I mention that, every time I come on the program, we don't have anybody to deal with the mass mental aspect of these players. And I know they can handle that for protocol. We don't have any bats, we don't have any bowlers. Sandra Paula winner there, Sandra Paula better than the rest of better than that. And we keep making that excuses for these batsmen all the time. We were doing good against Zimbabwe, maybe got a Safari going to get beat again, or coming against Pierce,
that's true.
Can't handle Pierce bowling.
No, you're right. All right, thanks, poet. Good to hear you. We can take another call. We got 441790. Let's go. Now and change focus. It's coming up to 7:32 now. Jeff, we ain't going to keep you too much longer. We've got one or two more questions for you. But there's some cricket being played in Barbados. I haven't seen Phil Wallace. He hasn't made that team at all. So, 6 teams certainly playing at the 3Ws Oval. And Kirk Graves, who's the director, and of course, a gentleman who I saw yesterday, I did some commentaries, doing some excellent work in terms of batting Jonathan Carter. They've joined us, and we are very keen to hear what's happening in terms of this competition. Hello to you, Kirk Graves. How are you, my friend? Kirk?
I'm wonderful. Thank you guys for having me. How are you guys doing?
Good. Fine. Tell us, how has it gone so far in terms of your competition? BIM 10.
Yeah, everything is going well. Unfortunately, we had 2 games rained out today, but for the beginning of the tournament, all is going well so far, so we're excited to continue the tournament.
Indeed. And you've got, of course, with you Jonathan Carter. Jonathan, how's it gone for you as a batsman? Certainly, I saw you yesterday batting beautifully. Jonathan? Mr. Carter, where are you?
Here, Andrew, can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear. How's it gone for you, Jonathan?
Good night again, everyone. Thanks for having me. It's a great experience, to be honest. It's something new to the Caribbean, and I'm very grateful for it to be here. As you all know, there's a lot of youngsters involved, and there's something very new to expose these youngsters. So it's been good for me and my Warriors team. They've been learning a lot, so hopefully we can continue in the where we've been playing.
And of course, Kirk, it exposes so much talent. I mean, it's Dream 11, and it's also on Willow TV, I understand.
Yes. So Willow signed off. I believe this is the first time that Willow actually came on board with the Dream 11. So right now, obviously, we're carrying the games in the sub-Asian continent through Dream 11 and their platform. But we're also carrying the game in the United States and Canada. So it's massive exposure for these youngsters and the senior players that are playing. As we can tell with the saturation of the T20 game, there's a big push for more T10 cricket being played. And with the games being carried on Willow, there are a lot of American owners, two specifically now playing in teams in the Abu Dhabi T10. Mm-hmm. You have a franchise who have connection to the US and the CPL. So it's just a great platform for these youngsters to gain exposure that they would not necessarily have gained just playing domestic cricket in the Caribbean. So we're very, very excited for the youngsters to be participating in this tournament.
Mm-hmm. Well, fellow, Dr. Ford, any questions for the gentleman?
Gentlemen, what's your big goal by hosting this tournament?
Kirk, that's for you. And
yeah, I can take that. Again, it's about exposure. The big goal for me, one, is to establish Barbados One as one of the leading sports tourism destinations in the Caribbean. But outside of that, with the inclusion of the 60, there's no real benchmark for making the 60. So I think it is a great opportunity for these youngsters to come in, showcase their talent, and, you know, get an opportunity to play in the 60. And you never know, with great performances, they can get into the CPL. With the amount of cricket being played in the US as well, there's opportunity for exposure there. So on the grand scheme of things, our main focus is just expose the young talent in Barbados to hone their skills outside of Barbados and make cricket a professional career.
Mm-hmm. Jonathan?
Honestly, I just want to ask you a question. T10,
mm-hmm.
How does the shifting and the dynamics of this T10
mm-hmm.
differ from even playing the CPL T20 or even the 50 over? How do you get your cricketers, your group of players,
mm-hmm.
transitioning their thinking? And obviously, it has to be a quicker mindset, a quicker game than the other formats. How do you get them to adjust?
All right. Good night to you, fellow.
Good
night. If it is one thing about this cricket is that it is ever moving. It's very fast paced, and to be honest, it brings out the skills. For example, our first two games we lost, right, and the guys were still kind of feeling it out.
Mm-hmm.
But we had our team meetings with the head coach Suleiman Ben and assistant coach Ryan Nurse. And we spoke to these youngsters, and we told them that, you know, you have to learn very quickly. You have to work out batsmen in the first over or the first couple of balls that you bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes you need certain situations to wake up players and get them, get the best out of them. I think this has brought the best out of certain players in the Barbados in the Barbados cricketing fraternity, right? In terms of the pace of the game compared to the T20, there's no time to relax. There's no time to, well, basically think. You also have time involved in the game as well. So everything has to be flowing. For me, the youngsters will have something to learn from this and go forward playing their cricket. So I really think that in terms of the pace of the game,
mm-hmm.
it will help in terms of their reaction skills.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen improvement already, fellow.
But John, don't stay with us because there's someone on the line who wants to participate. 4241790. Hello, welcome, Mason and guests. Hello, welcome.
Hi, good evening, Andrew.
And good evening to you. Good evening to you. How are you, my friend?
I'm pretty fine, thank you.
Nice to hear you.
Well, thank you. How are you and your family doing?
Everybody's going well.
Okay, well, thank you. My comment is, you know, I've said it before, right? If you want top quality fruit,
mm-hmm.
you must grow top quality trees. I mean, there's no other way. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying that we need to develop the spiritual, intellectual, mm-hmm. and psychological aspects of our people.
Mm-hmm.
If we do not address those core values, develop that sense of pride, dignity, determination, hard work, we will continue to fail at whatever we put our hands to. The problem with our Caribbean team, I'm sorry to put it this bluntly, is the people in it.
Mm.
We need to develop our people spiritually and intellectually. And we are doing so many things wrong that We are on a collision course with disaster. In fact, we are in the midst of disaster. So our cricket is just a reflection of how we are. Our economies, mm-hmm. if you look at Barbados, for instance, 97% black. Who controls the economy?
Mm-hmm. We as a people need to look at those core values. Cricket is just a reflection of whom and how we are.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. All right. Interesting comment. Coming 4341790. Just checking. What's going on with you there? Just getting a lot of feedback. I think you got it right now. Just double checking to see if
something has just happened.
Something has just happened. Of course.
An electronic.
Okay. We'll get it right. Yes, yes, yes. In terms of the times, Kirk, what are the times for these matches?
Sure. On the days where we have three games, games begin at 9:30, second game begins at 12, and the third game begins at 2:30. On the days where we have only two games, the first game begins at 12 noon, and the second game begins at 2:30.
Mm-hmm. I see. And are we going to take a call? We can. 4341790.
Yeah, I think we're back up already.
Yeah. Hello, welcome, Mason and Guest.
Hello, good night, Andrew. How are you doing, man?
Good night to you.
Andrew, one thing I want to know, season's greetings.
Season's greetings.
Yes. Right now, we are down and out.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we are down and out. For the reason why, you can't afford to get both 78 in a test match. Don't forget, I told you, we have to look for players. And the question you asked tonight, who can follow Phil Simmons? That's the question I want to know, who can follow Phil Simmons.
Mm-hmm.
Only boy who follow Phil Simmons now is Desmond Haynes and Roddy Essex and the board that behind the guest team. Because we ain't going anywhere. And far from that, I hear that my second night, he hope in 2023 that he has to raise again. What we can raise, Andrew?
Hmm.
We don't have the boy to raise it.
Mm-hmm.
The only boy we got to raise it, Andrew, is the Lord. And we got to help the Lord to help you at least. Andrew, we are very, very, very poor. And it look bad. Every night, every Tuesday night, we hear talking on TV, talking on radio, trying to help them, but the players have no interest. When those players come back from Australia, Andrew, them are going to go in next to me. If they can't come in next, buddy, they can't play.
Mm.
A lot of them come back here, the big gold chain on, and then tell them, one, two, break down, put you on my book. He's gone up. He's what? Ignorant.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew, when you ask a question, they don't give you no answer. They don't want answer when you say, because the person that you say, you want his body, you want to get rid of his body. But you'd be asking them the right question.
Mm-hmm.
I just told you already. When you ask a question, all of the doubt covering up. Let the doubt cover up, and you talk it talk. Nobody can do nothing. It's a free country. And you, I thank you very much. I continue to do what
you got. Seasons.
Hello.
Continue.
If you got to attack, mm-hmm. attack. Didn't care what it said.
All right. Thanks,
you
could
share, you say yes, but they don't want to answer you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Season's greetings to you, 4341790. We're going to let Jeff Lemon go. Jeff, of course, the Australians had it very easy against the West Indies. But what about David Warner? He's been struggling recent times. Tell us about David.
Well, he's had a lot on his mind, aside from the cricket. He's been going through this process of trying to get the captaincy ban reversed that was placed on him after the ball tampering incident in 2018. He thought it might be a relatively straightforward process, basically because he was unhappy with having that continuing black mm-hmm. mark next to his name. So he wanted to have that removed. Cricket Australia was quite open to helping make that happen, but in the end it's turned into a bit of a debacle and it's all become too complicated and he's given up on it basically. But that has been a distraction the last few months and hasn't helped him, I would imagine, play his best cricket, although he's usually pretty good at putting aside off-field distractions. So look, I think David Warner's been a wonderful player for well over a decade in Australian teams. He's got 20 test hundreds and 8,000 runs, so I don't think there's much question about his quality. He's having a lean patch at the moment, but he's had those before and come back from them much stronger. So Personally, I wouldn't be too worried about David Warner.
So he's not in danger of losing his place then, because there's tremendous competition in Australia, Jeff?
Well, I don't think so. I mean, there's not really tremendous competition for opening bats.
Right.
You know, there are a bunch of middle order players making runs, but there's no massive standout opening batting candidate who, and when you've got someone of Warner's experience, it's not something that you lightly discard. So I don't think there's any discussion that's at actual selection levels about his place. There's a bit of media chat, but that's just because media there's chat. Not much else to talk about after a series where everybody else was successful.
Media chat. Final question. What's gone wrong with Jason Hold in your view?
That's a hard one, isn't it? It was interesting watching him bowl over the last couple of weeks and just the lack of penetration. I mean, his pace has dropped off a little bit, but it's not like he was ever the fastest going around. He built his success on consistency. I can't really answer the question because I don't know. It's mysterious as to why. I mean, when he was so successful for a period of time, that was a bit mysterious as well as to why he was taking so many wickets for a couple of years. And now it's equally mysterious as to why he looks
that's
so
an
much
interesting
less
comment you just made though, Jeff. Mysterious as to why he was taking so many wickets. Could you expand on that? What do you mean by that?
Well, at the point, you know, there were a couple of years there where Jason Holder was taking wickets at about 10 runs apiece.
Right.
And he never looks like the most threatening bowler, right?
No.
It's not like he comes in and bowls thunderbolts. It's not like he was getting vast amounts of movement off the seam or swinging it extravagantly. He was just consistently putting it in the right spot.
Mm.
And players just kept getting out to those good length, good line deliveries.
Mm.
And so he was one of those players where you weren't quite sure why he was as effective as he was. And so to my eye, it doesn't look like that much has changed, but it looks like everybody was able to negotiate him relatively comfortably during that test series.
Jeff, would you say he's overrated?
I don't think so. I think if anything, he's done more with his ability than perhaps he had a right to do. I think he's been a great success as a player, as someone who maybe has had a more modest set of talent than other players, but he's had the determination to make the best of it. And that goes for his batting as much as his bowling.
So
it goes for the fact that he was made to captain that side at such a young age and did a really good job of it.
So, Jeff, do you think I should ask the question again?
No, I don't think he's overrated.
Okay.
I think, if anything, he's done, like I said, he's done more with his ability than you might have thought possible.
Beautiful. Philo Wallace has got his hand up. Philo?
Yeah, I want to ask Jeff a question. Manus Lambertje, Jeff, a man who came in as a concussion sub in England for Steve Smith, and he's never looked back. What is his mindset, or what is how does he go about doing what he's doing so successfully and for such a long period of time? He's batted four times against the West Indies and he's had 300s. What is his mindset?
I think his mindset, Philo, has changed over time, because he's watching him this season, he was a lot more calm and composed and relaxed than he has been. You might remember seeing him, say, a year ago or 18 months ago, when he was doing all of the extravagant leaving of the ball and talking to himself and dancing around and jumping around in the crease and all of the rest of it. And he basically said last week that was probably because he was nervous, you know, because he was still unsure of his place in the team, you know, and now he's very sure of his place in the team. He's able to just shut his mouth a bit and bat, which is a great relief to everybody else around him, I think. So he's an interesting character because he's just his own person. He doesn't seem to worry too much about what other people want him to do.
Mm-hmm.
He just does his own thing and concentrates on his own methods, and that's worked for him. The Australian team environment has been open enough to let him do things the way that he wants to do them. He's full of energy. I mean, I remember watching him in his first test series in 2018 in Dubai when it was about 50 degrees, and he got a wicket before the tea break bowling, and so he stayed out on the field for the entire tea break just practicing his bowling for 20 minutes and then kept bowling afterwards. You know, normal players don't do that sort of thing. So that's the kind of the hunger that he has to keep playing and to be better and better is something that is innate to him, I think.
All right. Thanks very much for your contribution. Let's pause for the final business calls. And, of course, when we come back, we'll continue our discussion on the BIM 10 cricket as well. And we're going to take your calls. Mason and guests, brought in association with our very good friends at ASA Fieldwork Rum, the best shot of the day.
ASA Field White Rum. If anybody feel they could drink with me, let them come. Open your mouth, drink it up, or you can't qualify to sing this song. Tell me, bartender, ESA is the best shot of the day. Boy, pa 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 da 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 pa 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 da da. Say what you want, ESA is the best shot of the day. Is the best shot of the day.
All right, let's go straight back to Kirk Graves, tournament director. How supportive is the BCA in this arrangement? Kirk, can you tell me?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. From the inception, the BCA has been an amazing person to partner with. We've had some unique challenges prior to starting the tournament, and everything we've asked of the BCA, they have been graceful in lending a helping hand. So honestly, we could not have done this without the support of the BCA. So we're ever thankful as an organization to the Barbados Cricket Association for every aspect of help they've given us. So they've been a great partner in this journey with us as well.
How far are you in the tournament now? You're what, halfway stage? Well, how far are you? Tell me. Or more like
that? Yeah, we're about halfway. Mm-hmm. We have 8 days left of cricket.
Okay.
The finals are June the 22nd of December.
At what time?
The finals will be played at 9:30 a.m. obviously to coincide with the sub-Asian market as our partners Dream 11.
Right.
So the finals will be on the 22nd at 9:30 a.m.
Oh, I see. And any benefits to Barbados in terms of economic activity, employment, I mean, income for the players just before Christmas?
Yeah, absolutely. I can share this with you. When we looked at the business model, we were able to offer the marquee players $175 per game. And every player would make $125 per game first year. So that is regardless of if players play a game, they don't play a game. So, you know, we wanted to have some kind of economic impact prior to Christmas. Mm-hmm. So, again, players will be paid for their services, whether they played or not. So that was something we were very adamant about. And we're happy that we can do that for the persons involved. And we're looking forward to next year, obviously, you know, going back to the table to Dream 11 to possibly see, you know, what more we can do for the players, because the brand of cricket that we're playing in Barbados, to me, and look at the rest of Dream 11 tournaments, far exceeds the quality and the caliber. So we're definitely excited, and we will definitely go to bat for the players for a better Dream 11 next year.
So this is going to be an annual event then? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that is definitely in our views. We don't just want to come and do it one time.
Mm-hmm.
We want to be able to make this an annual event, as I said, that we can have it on the calendar of events, for the Barbados calendar of events. So definitely not a one-time thing. We're looking to come back next year and make it bigger and better.
Mm. Jonathan, how do the players feel about this tournament?
Well, at the end of the day, anytime you're playing a tournament like this and being paid at this time of the year, I think everyone seems to be pretty happy about it.
Mm-hmm.
To collect a decent pay day at the end of the year for Christmas. I think guys are very well into it. And I think they are enjoying the format as well. So I think the guys are pretty happy that it came at this point in time.
I see. And what are some of the highlights so far, Jonathan? I saw you smashing some yesterday. Any of the young players that you want? I've got my pen, I've got my paper. Any of the young players that you've seen so far? I like Kadeem Ali, and I think he's a wonderful cricketer. And, you know, we've seen some good bowling, some good batting. Any young players that you want to identify, Jonathan?
We have quite a few, Andrew. We have players like Jair McAllister. We have Javed Leacock.
Yes.
We have young Wickham. We have a few players on my side. We have guys like Jaden Roberts.
Yes.
We have
Shakir
young
Paris.
Shakir Paris. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Young Perryman.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew, to be honest, there are quite a few youngsters who are involved in mm-hmm. this tournament.
Indeed. Well, just before you gentlemen go, of course, we can come back next week and continue the discussion. Kirk, so overall you're happy and you're inviting Bajans to come. I know it's a little bit of a difficult time, really, so early, the more you're catering for the Indian market. But what do you say to the people of Barbados? Invite them to come and watch some cricket at the CW's Oval. Kirk?
Yeah, definitely. We've seen an influx of English visitors come to watch as well throughout the day. So we're inviting all Barbadians. It is free to come out and support the local talent.
Mm-hmm.
So we're inviting everyone to come and watch the games. Again, the games are 12 and 2 on the days where we have two games, and the games are 9:30, 12 and 2:30 when we have three games. So we're inviting everybody in the Barbadian community. Please come out and support the local talent as they hone their skills on international television.
So what are the games on tomorrow? Can you tell me? Games on tomorrow? Look at that schedule, Kirk.
Yeah.
You got me. Take your time. Spot, take your time. Shortly. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5.
You put me on the spot. I don't have the schedule.
Okay.
I don't have the schedule in front of me.
Jonathan, do you know who's playing tomorrow? Jonathan, do you play tomorrow, Jonathan?
No, we are playing on Thursday, Andrew. And I also have a question for Philo.
Yes, question for Philo. Yes. Yes, yes, Jonathan.
Mr. Wallace. How do you feel about this current format? Especially playing Barbados.
A format that is any cricket at the moment, Jonathan, in Barbados is good. It's good to obviously expose more talent. The key thing is that I would like to know if the players understand how T10 cricket is played and take it and have a different understandings for the different formats. I know you just said it's a good payday, but I want, outside of payday, I want the understanding of our cricketers, because at the end of the day, it's still cricket. I think it can help the development of these cricketers, and their skill sets can also improve. Andrew, before I come off, I want to say hello to the goalkeeper bar in Mylors Hill, a lady named Kathy. She wants to see
it. Say that again, the goalkeeper bar in Mylors Hill.
I think
that's the one that Dr. Ford goes to that very often. Dr. Ford, do you know that bar in Mylors Hill? Oh, you prefer Licorice Village?
You get a lot of ESA feel there.
I'm not familiar with it, but
it's good to I think Jonathan, this format can help develop our cricketers.
Right.
But we have to have the right mindset.
Right.
When we are speaking to these cricketers about this format and the other formats, I don't want us to lose focus on the other formats. This is all about skill sets, and they can improvise here, but I think getting the other formats as well, understanding is important. But any cricket being played, I think is good for development. I used to do it. I played BCL cricket, all kinds of things.
Cricket in the road. Yes. And even in my Lord's Hill. Philo, thank you very much indeed. Always a good to have you.
And Andrew,
yes,
just
quickly
to come back to you, tomorrow at 12, Voyagers play Warriors. Tomorrow at 2:30, the Settlers play the Guardians.
Right. So I invite you to come back next week to continue the discussion, of course, when you and Mason and guests, you heard even in the White House. So don't worry too much about it. Joe Biden just heard
you.
And all the wonderful people there all across the world. Even Ken Husband's heard you as well. And he's somewhere in my Lord's.
Hello, how you doing, man?
Thank you guys so much for having us, and we look forward to the support coming out to watch you guys play.
Thank you, and of course, we'll invite you back next week to continue to ensure that the Bajans and, of course, people across the world hear about this wonderful competition. Thanks to you, Dr. Ford, as well. Thanks to you, Philo Wallace, getting your kohi soup tomorrow. Thanks to Jeffrey Dujon, who's brilliant, and, of course, Derek Murray, who says at his age he does not want to be president of the Cricket West Indies. I'm Andrew Mason. He's open for a bye tomorrow. It's good night.